This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Well, in the end, it's the Knicks that land Carmelo Anthony from Denver, and Amari Stoudemire happy that he's on hand. Stoudemire, addressing the media today, says the team will be hard to guard now, likes the idea of having that 1-2 punch.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 304. Mick Monagle here with you on The Fan on this Friday morning. I talked a little bit yesterday about Nico, I'm going to have to come in there and give you a couple songs for rejoins to get me in the going on vacation mood. We're going to have to throw in at least one Jimmy Buffett song because I am going to warmer weather and it's going to be 5 o'clock somewhere quite often. And red wine, things to get me in the mood. You're not in the mood, you get in the mood. 888-808-1019. I'm watching the Rangers, and I'm watching the highlights of the Ranger game. Obviously, an offensive explosion. They scored 9 goals, 4 in the first, 4 in the third. And, you know how it is. You know what you're going to say. You know what Ranger fans are feeling. You know what we're going to say. Who the hell, like now. After the lifeless performances you've given with the team on life support with, one more loss ending the season, this is when you explode? I mean, great. You didn't end the season against the Islanders. Great. The team's been a damn joke. This is one more slap in the face. That's what it feels like. It sucks to say that, but that's what it feels like. It feels like, oh, now. Now you come. Where was that first period against Toronto? Where was that first period against the Devils? Where was that first period the entire month of December? Just a hideous season. And honestly, if I were the Rangers, I would call George Costanza. I would say, I'm leaving on a high note. We're ending the season tonight. Beat the Islanders 9-2. That's it. We're leaving. We'll call it a year. And then the Knicks take on the Pistons in a possible playoff preview. That, listen, the Knicks didn't care about this game, and nor should they. And I heard a caller in with Keith, and I've heard this before. A lot of Knicks fans are worried about the Pistons. They're young, they're physical, they're tough. McCullough is a very talented player. He put up a big performance last night. I'm telling you right now, I am not worried about the first round. I am not worried about the first round. I am not worried about the Pistons. I'm really not even worried about the Bucks. I'm not worried about the... I'm not worried about... It's about beating the Boston Celtics. It's about beating the Boston Celtics. And, no heart, no OG. I didn't take much from the Celtic game either. I don't think it means much. I talked about it that night after the Celtic game. Like, what does this game mean? If anything, if I'm going to try and take anything from it, it further proof they can't beat the Celtics. Everybody was hanging their hat. Well, at least they played tougher. At least they hung with them. It shows that they can hang with them. No, it shows that even when they're up 3 points with 9 seconds to go, they can't win. That's what it showed to me. But right now, it's just about that. I did think in the first half in particular, Brunson looked really good. He's going to be, I think, fine come postseason time. And it's just a matter of how well they play together, how well they play defensively, if they up their effort level there. And if OGN, I think the most important dynamic for this Knick team right now is whether or not OG can be the offensive threat he was during the time period that Brunson was gone. Can they still find a way? Now, I don't know if he's going to average 28 points with Brunson because there's only so many points and so many baskets to be scored. But can he still be that offensive threat he was? Can he still get to the basket that way? Can he still shoot that way? Can he still be that player as well as obviously they're going to need him to play top defense? And against the Pistons, you know exactly who he's going to guard. Against the Pistons, you know he's going to guard Cunningham. At least he should be. He should be on Cunningham. But I don't take much out of these two games. They're going to lock up the 3-seed. It doesn't matter when. They're going to. And it most likely is going to be against the Pistons, and I'm really not worried about that series. And it's almost like you can't even, I mean, not that they shouldn't worry about it or get ready for it, but it's like you can't even, if they lose that series, it's such a freaking disaster. There's no point even really worrying about it until they get into the series and it feels different. Right now, I'm not too worried about beating the Pistons. It's about beating the Boston Celtics, which I don't know if they have a chance to do. But I think the most important dynamic is obviously how many minutes are they going to actually play Mitch Robinson, who didn't play in this game either. Are they going to up it from the 15, 16 he's been playing nightly? Are they going to play him and Cat together, and how does that look? How much more intense is the defense? How better are they at, you know, limiting three-point shots? And for me, OG needs to be an offensive threat because I don't trust Mikal Bridges to be that. So I need OG to be what he was without Brunson, even though Brunson is back. 888-808-1019. Let's go to Isaac in Brooklyn. What's up, Isaac?
Hey, Chris, what's up? First, I think Travis Hunter, if Tibbs was the coach of the Giants, he'd be playing both sides the entire game. Yeah.
That's not a bad call. Yeah. If they draft Hunter, they should, and the Knicks lose in the first round and fire Tibbs, they should hire him as a consultant, no doubt.
Yeah, Giants hire him. Yeah, also, one more. I didn't think about the Rangers. I didn't care. Like, you know, season's over, forget it.
Yeah.
But I did think that if I'm going down, you're coming down with me. That's what I told the Rangers beat down the Islanders.
Yeah.
Yeah, one more quick one before the Knicks. On like this, with somebody brought it up, I want to make a similar point before from like Evan and Tiki, that they're talking about if Alonzo broke Devin Williams last year. Yeah. I don't think he broke him. Maybe he was getting his pitches tipped, you know, the whole John Boy from last year. But I do think he was, and he changed his mechanics. And because he changed the mechanics or something, he's just taking a little bit of time to get used to it. And I think it's more of a that problem than, you know, a confidence thing. He's an all-star. He's a professional player. He doesn't.
He's more than just an all-star. He's one of the two or three premier relievers in the sport. Like, he's better.
Yeah,
he's better than just an all-star.
Or something.
I don't know what 100%. It is, but I have to admit, I'm sorry. The idea, and I love Evan, and me and him think very alike on a lot of baseball things. And
it
I saw.
I don't think it was Evan. It was a caller.
Oh, yeah. No, I saw a clip where Evan asked the question.
That.
Yeah, no, Evan asked the question, not mechanics. Oh. Evan asked the question about whether or not Pete Alonso broke him. I think BT said the same thing. I find it patently ridiculous. I find it absolutely ridiculous to suggest that a home run in the playoffs that obviously costs this team a series, it's a huge home run. It's arguably one of the biggest home runs hit in the history of the Mets. It's a devastating blow, so I'm not minimizing what that home run was. It was a huge home run. But, like,
yeah, I know.
I mean, the idea that he's the idea that he's not pitching well now because he's somehow, you know, been beat mentally because of that home run is just...
No,
four games
mentally.
In,
I mean, like...
No, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying.
He's switching something up.
Listen, Isaac, I understand what you're saying, but you brought up the point of Pete Alonso, and I'm agreeing with you that I feel like that is And you just said you don't think that's what it is. I'm telling you, I think it's ridiculous to think it's that's what it is. I agree. I don't know if it's mechanics. I don't know if it's just early season. I don't know if it's switching teams. I don't know if it's the idea that he hasn't had much regular work. It's all of those things mixed into one.
It could be all.
Could there be something in the idea that the last time he was on the mound, he blew the game, and you know it's stuck with him for a minute? The idea he's broken now is absolutely ridiculous. He is going to be fine.
Yeah,
I don't even know if he's making major mechanical switches. I just think they've either been blown out or lost, so they haven't really needed a closer. He's pitched sporadic, and he's been away from the team for 4 or 5 days having his first son. He's got a new team.
That's another one.
And he's at the forefront of a 50-year rule change that maybe the idea there are some people who aren't happy about it. I don't know what's going on inside the Yankees, but the idea that he is broken and that he's going to have to lose the closer's role, Evan is doubled down on that. Evan said it again today that he thinks he's going to lose the closer's role.
I don't agree with him at all. I don't agree with him.
It's ridiculous. It could be the most ridiculous baseball point Evan's ever made.
It could be. He just thinks maybe he's into him. But I just want to, on the Knicks, I called you a couple weeks ago, Chris, about that Bridges may come off the bench, something like that, because he doesn't play well with Brunson.
Mm-hmm.
And now we saw what he did and what Anunoby did with Brunson out. I still think I agree with you 100%. It has to be Anunoby who's taking those shots because he's the one who stepped up offensively. During these games, they don't go to him. When Brunson gets doubled on the wing, they give it to Bridges, and then he looks lost at the ball again because it could be something with Brunson. Maybe he feels bad. I don't know what the hell's going through his mind. But they don't give the ball to Anunoby when Brunson's on the floor. They should start giving it to Anunoby and let him play his pick and roll or something with Towns like he did with Brunson instead of Bridges. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm just saying,
it should be him, but they don't give him the ball. They give it more to Bridges.
I agree with you. They're going to have to. Now, OG's going to have to pick his spots. And I'm not saying the offense should run through him, obviously. But I do think he's got to be a little bit more aggressive. He's got to take what he did, understand that now that's part of his role, and that's part of Tibbs, coaching that into him and working on that. But, what he did while Brunson was gone, he's got to continue. It's not going to be at the same level because Brunson's Brunson and he's going to, take a lot of the shots and be the guy and have the offense run through him, and as it should. No one's suggesting otherwise, but when he sees his opportunities, I'm hoping the confidence level is through the roof. I'm hoping he's willing to get to the basket more. I'm hoping he's willing to take that shot more. He showed that he can create his own shot a little bit. And he's got to be willing to do that. And I think they're going to need that, especially if they're going to double-team Brunson and if Karl-Anthony Towns is going to live up to his M.O. of being, absent in some of these big games, you're going to have to see OG Anunoby. So I just think it's an interesting dynamic because he really stepped up, and I would love to see that continue. Mario in Long Beach. What's up, Mario?
I don't see my good show as always.
Oh, thank you, buddy.
I see a little bit things. I got a little Nick point and then a Giant point, if
sure.
I may. First the Knicks. I see it a little bit differently than you did with Boston, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you were saying that Boston really wanted to win that game, by the way,
they
so did.
Did
the Knicks.
They did. I mean, okay, so, yeah. They did. No Horford and Brown hardly played, but yes, they did want to win, no doubt.
Well, Horford was hurt,
Right. But he's going to be back for the playoffs, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and Porzingis is not going to shoot 80% from three.
I wouldn't think so, but I don't know.
Yeah, okay, so when you were saying, to me, that they lost for two reasons, right? Number one, they missed 8 foul shots, or 9.
Okay, they shot 60% from the free throw line. Unacceptable. Yep.
Okay, that's number one. Although they would have won the game if they hit their free throws. Secondly, when you were saying, which is true, they couldn't win with down, what was it, down?
Up three with
10 seconds to go?
Yeah.
That was a tremendously bad coaching decision. You know why?
They should have fouled him.
They should have fouled him.
Yeah.
He takes two.
I understand that, but again, you're relying on, now you're pointing to things you don't think are going to happen. They have to shoot better from the foul line. Porzingis isn't going to do this. That was a bad coaching decision. Well, Porzingis is going to be on the floor. The Knicks are going to be at the foul line, and Tibbs is going to be the head coach. And you just said the Knicks wanted to win that game as bad as you could want to win a game. So why would I think that those things that have killed the Knicks time and time again against the Celtics aren't going to be there in the postseason? You can't just wash them away under the eyes of, well, listen, they, you know, they can't do that again. Like, they continue to do it.
Yeah, but my point here is I think Tibbs would be smarter next time to know you got a, especially when you got a guy like Tatum who you know can step back from the three.
Yeah, but I mean, again, do you think? But if you know, if you know it, and I know it, what makes you think Tibbs? Maybe that's just the philosophy Tibbs has, and he's not going to care that he got beat on it one time when he thinks in the, over the course.
Well, maybe he'll see. Yeah. Or maybe he'll see he made a mistake and he'll do differently next.
I guess. I'm just saying he's the head coach of the Knicks. If you see it and I see it, why didn't he see it last night, the other night?
I mean, it's a lot of people said. I mean, it's quite evident.
Well, then why didn't he do it?
I don't know.
Well, that's my question. My question is, did he forget to say it, or does he believe in not fouling up three?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was a terrible thing. I agree with you,
but I don't think he's stupid. I think he's got a. My point is, I don't. He either like. Why did he not? He chose not to do it, so he must believe that that's the best option for the team. Like, I'm concerned about the idea that he missed that, and I'm just saying that. People want to say, "Hey, we had three blowouts prior to that. At least they hung with him." I'm like, "Okay, yeah, at least they hung with him." Now Boston knows that they could beat him in a blowout and they could beat him in a tight game, and that the Knicks will make the mistakes and the Knicks won't hit the foul shots, and the Knicks will figure out a way to blow the game, and we are uber confident against the Knicks. Like, I think that's more to the point than, "Hey, what's the likelihood the Knicks make those mistakes again?" I guess. What's the likelihood the game's even close? Three out of four weren't. I'm just saying I can't take much out of that game. I can't. As much as each team wants to win the game, it doesn't mean anything. They all wanted to win the previous three when they were blowouts. This one was close. The Knicks had every opportunity to win the game. You're right. They didn't hit foul shots. You're right. The coach made a coaching decision, coaching error. You're right. They gave up good looks to Porzingis, and he hit them. Like, the idea that those things are just going to go away because they've learned from it, I don't know if I feel that way. Eddie in Rockland. What's up, Eddie?
Hey, Mr. Griswold. What are you doing, man?
What's up? That's right. Another family vacation. What's going on?
That's all right, man. You put that pedal to the metal and you just cut everybody off. And
I'm a very safe driver. I'm a very safe driver.
Now let me get when that trip starts taking off, man. Which kid usually gets on your nerve first? At what mile mark do you want to?
I would say, without question, I'll make it out of the driveway, and then it's up Then it's up for grabs. But I think we'll be leaving. Late. I think we're going to be leaving later, so hopefully they're sleeping for the first bit of the car ride. But, you know, it's not easy with kids in the car for a long period of time. They are who they are. You know how it is.
At what mile mark do you say that I'm going to take the belt off?
Nah, I would never threaten them with a belt. No, it won't get to that point. It'll just be like, enough already.
That's a joke, Chris.
I know, but I'm just saying, it's enough already. Enough. Like, you know, I'll threaten to turn the car around. I'll turn this damn car. I'll pull a Chris Farley from Billy Madison. But that's about it.
Yeah. All right, on the Jets here. I heard you talking about the Jets. I got scenarios. I got to put you in the hook. Your name just a couple scenarios.
Yeah, come on. Hook me to some scenarios. There we go.
And, you know, what would you think? Like, if you're Aaron Glenn, right, and Sanders is sitting there, mm-hmm. Do you think in the back of your head, if I sign this kid, his old man's going to be breathing down my neck, especially that he's an ex-DB,
no.
He's a head coach, and this is my first head coaching job. I don't need this guy riding my tail. I'm gonna bypass Sanders.
No.
I don't think that at all. If Sanders goes down to the Jets, you think they'll take him?
I think they should. My gut tells me they wouldn't. I will say this about the GMs. Like, getting the quarterback wrong is a major, major knock on you. And I don't think this GM, Muji, wants to have his first pick be a risky quarterback, even if it fell to them. I think you should be that risky. I want to take the bold pick. But whatever they do, I disagree with you on why they wouldn't do it. I don't think this head coach, this guy's uber confident in himself, uber confident. He thinks he's about to turn the Jets into a championship-level team, like he, or at least a consistent winning team. He's not worried about Deion Sanders or anybody else. They'll make a decision based on what they think is best for the team. I don't think he's worried about anybody and the footsteps. I think he's expecting to do an amazing job and turn around the Jets. I don't think he's worried about Sanders at all.
Yeah, you know, I called Carlin and Bart the other day, right?
How are they doing? My guys, they're good.
They're having a good time, man. And we had what they kept on talking about is this. Gio keeps on talking about this little skirmish him and Carlin got in by the car.
Yeah,
and now me and Bart got Carlin dressing up as Van Vader going into a UFC match against Gio for like $100,000. And he's ready to do it because Carlin's doing all this side work for, like, he's doing a food show now.
Yeah.
And he needs side work money. So we're finally going to put the little skirmish outside in the streets of Manhattan to rest with a throwdown between Carlin and Gio. See what happens there.
Yeah, sign me up. I'm very excited. I'm glad you were so integral in making that happen, Eddie. I'm glad, you know, Eddie does yeoman's work. He's out there. He doesn't care about himself. He doesn't care about what people think. He's out there doing God's work. He's trying to make sure that he can, you know, hang every host that he can onto a some sort of weird hypothetical so that he can come back and get them 2 months later. He's out there making sure that everybody knows that I'm unable to do the bike charity thing on May 4th. He's out there making sure that he gets Carlin and Gio to have a UFC fight. I mean, who else would do this for you? I mean, I hope everyone listening to my voice, I really hope you take a second and appreciate what Eddie and Rockland tries to do for you. Because he doesn't have to. I'm sure Eddie had a very successful life and career. He could just sit at home and not worry about such trivial things. Instead, he's chosen to make it his life's work, and I want to applaud him. And I really hope all of you appreciate everything that Eddie is doing for all of us. Because, I mean, it's not easy. It is not easy. And he doesn't have to. But he does it for you. Thank you, Eddie. Thank you so much.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code MAN at checkout. That's harrys.com, code MAN. Enjoy.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out, procrastination, putting it off, kicking the can down the road. In, plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out, carpet in the bathroom. Like, why? In, knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
Talk New York sports here. The Fan.
All right, 3:31. I don't know what it is, but I could just picture myself on a cruise ship reading a book, cocktail with a little umbrella in it, watching all the nonsense that goes on at the pool and, you know, all the games that they're playing or whatever else. Like, it's just, that's a vacation song for me. I don't know why, but it just reminds me. And as hopefully the weather starts to get a little bit better, as we get closer to summer, you know, I also have my tradition, too. I haven't done it yet, and these hours are different because I drive in the middle of the morning. I used to drive into work afternoon, sun shining. Now I'm driving in, you know, midnight. It's not the same. But I used to have a tradition of every year I would wait for the perfect day of spring that really felt like summer and blast a little bit of Jimmy Buffett just to get you ready for that summer feeling. The late, great Jimmy Buffett, but now I drive it, you know, midnight, and I really don't get that sense anymore. It's not the same. I have to wait for the weekend. But I'm always driving around doing a million different things with the kids. I don't have time for Jimmy Buffett. And plus, they'll yell at me, and they'll tell me to play this or play that. They want these, you know, these stupid songs they like. you know how it is. 3:32, McMonagle here with you on The Fan, 888-808-1019. And I do just want to... Like, I said it yesterday, and I mean it, with the New York Jets, and they're, I am, for whatever it is, at least I'm consistent, right? I'm big on the quarterback. If you're at the top of the draft, you don't have a quarterback, and I heard Evan talk about this too, I think Justin Fields is a really good quarterback to have while you draft the young quarterback and literally have a competition. And whoever wins it, if someone wins it and you feel good about it, either way, you're a winner. Like, that's how I view it. If I find my quarterback, if the competition helped cause it, or, like, if they draft a quarterback number 7, which, again, I would if Shedeur Sanders falls, it's going to be tough to pass up on that. The second-best quarterback in the draft for a team that doesn't have a future quarterback, I know they gave him 2 years and, you know, $20 million a year, but, like, Justin Fields is not a guarantee. Justin Fields, again, wasn't very good last year. Justin Fields was benched in favor of Russell Wilson, and they didn't go back to him even though they faltered down the stretch of the season. Like, I would think that if Shedeur Sanders falls, and I think there is a chance he'll fall to 7 now, I think the Jets would have to be all over it. Now, I understand why you want to draft Tyler Warren. He is an excellent tight end prospect. We saw him play in the 4-team tournament. He was the big tournament this year. He played extremely well. He's tough. He's physical. He would really help the dynamic of this offense, give a running quarterback kind of like a nice little blanket, a little outlet we've seen now the emergence of Bowers and what he was able to do at the quarter at the tight end position, and tight ends are becoming more and more prevalent inside the game every single year in the passing attack. He could block. Like, he would be a fine pick. And I think the Jets could go a bunch of different ways. They can go wide receiver. They can go D-tack. Like, they have enough room in every position to get whoever they deem to be the best player. And right now, I think they probably want to go safe at that pick. Muji, the first-year GM, the coach, talking about culture. And Tyler Warren is a tough son of a gun. I mean, he's kind of a lunch pail guy that you can build and bring into the culture that the Jets are trying to build real easy. I still think bold is the way to go. I want to be bold. I want to see if I can find my quarterback. I think if you draft Shedeur Sanders, if he falls to you at 7, and you put him in the quarterback room and have a legitimate competition. And you heard Fields yesterday talk about the idea of drafting a young quarterback. I'm sure he's not thrilled about it, but it is what it is. And competition might get the best out of it. And he lost the competition to Russell Wilson. Maybe he won't want to lose two competitions in a row. And if Fields becomes the answer to that question, great. And if I feel like I've got my quarterback and maybe even the first round pick had an impact on that, I'll live with the idea that and then I'll trade Shedeur or whatever and get a second round pick. But I would still be all about it. But I have a question here for the New York Jet fan. A young GM, right, who doesn't want to make a mistake with this 7th overall pick. Now, and a team that does have young, talented players that they believe that they can transition to a winner right now. Like, I would wonder, and not just the Giants, but I'm going to specifically say we could see a Giants-Jets trade here. But would you be willing to, as a Jet fan, if Shedeur Sanders falls to 7, be open to calls to trade back? Like, that's the only thing. If Shedeur Sanders is gone, I don't know if anyone's going to trade up to get a quarterback, but if you have a quarterback, and we know the value of quarterbacks in this draft, and even though he's fallen, right, that means really only the Giants have passed on him, and the Browns. Browns and Giants pass on him. After that, it's kind of an open road until you get to the Jets at 7, and clearly the Saints at 9. As, you know, if you could get an enormous haul and start your GM career making a trade for a perceived quarterback that many people don't believe in, and a top-heavy draft where really there's a handful of great players, but you get to 7 and there is a little bit of a dip for me after the top, you know, 5 picks. As good as Warren is, and maybe Warren's not even there. I think he probably will be, but maybe Warren's not there. Would you be willing to make the trade back, acquire a bunch of assets next year, a bunch of first-round picks, get into the draft, not have to make a decision, punt that first decision with the 7th overall pick, acquire a bunch of picks, start building something with this new head coach, a young rookie GM, not be forced to take a pick at 7, acquire a bunch of picks moving forward, get your feet wet in this draft, make what everyone's going to deem to be a smart pick, because a smart trade, because you're going to have to way overpay. You might be able to get 2 first-round picks for Shedeur Sanders, depending on how far, like for the Giants to get back to take the 32nd pick or 34th pick in this draft, the second pick in the second round, you might be able to get two first round picks. Like, if you make a big blockbuster deal, like, that's what I was thinking about. What would happen if Shedeur Sanders fell? And yesterday I said I would have a tough time not taking him, and I would have a tough time not taking the quarterback there at 7 if he falls to me. But I also was thinking about, what could you get if someone wants to jump up into that 7th pick to take the quarterback? Trading down for the Jets, as much as I think they need to win, it's not like that. Like the Giants, I don't want to trade back at 3. I want the quarterback, right? I've made that clear. But trading back means, you know, at 3, passing up on either Hunter or Carter. Like, I understand, I disagree with it, but I understand not wanting to take Shedeur. Let's just take that. Let's take everything we're hearing is true. The Giants don't want to take Shedeur, but they're drafting 3rd. I don't want to trade back because I think, and most people think, there are 2 players there, one of which would be guaranteed to them because we're all assuming that Cam Ward is going 1 to Tennessee. If you're sitting there at 3 and you have an opportunity to take one of these 2 players that are perceived generational, like top Pro Bowl talent, all pro talent, you know, players there, an excellent edge rusher, an excellent shutdown corner with the ability to play offense as well. Like, I don't want to pass on one of those two players. Once you get past there and you're going seventh, right, I'm open from that point to moving back. And for a quarterback that's falling, Shedeur Sanders, who's the second best quarterback in this draft, maybe. Now, you only do it if you can get the big package. Don't get me wrong. I'm not doing it for nothing. But if someone comes calling and offering, like, Shedeur Sanders in so many ways is the key to this draft. And I think the Jets could benefit from Shedeur falling. Either they get their quarterback of the future, have a legitimate competition with a 26-year-old Justin Fields, and if he wins the job, great. Again, if I come out of this, I don't care. If I come out of it finding I have a franchise quarterback, I don't care what else they do. They have made an enormous leap. So you could either draft Shedeur and have a legitimate future quarterback if Justin Fields flames out, or you find your answer quarterback one way or the other. Or if Shedeur Sanders falls and everyone wants to jump up in front of the Saints, or even just, you know, the Jets could move back to 9 if the Saints want to move up to take Shedeur. But I think specifically the New York Giants and other teams who'd be interested in the quarterback, like 9 is the line of demarcation, because I don't think they're going past the Saints. Would you be willing to move up and trade with the Jets? And if the Jets, again, ease into your first draft, you're talking about culture, you're talking about roster, you're talking about competition. Like, you got a bunch of things here where you could talk about the future of this franchise. Your first move is to make a blockbuster trade that you acquire a ton of first round, that you could get first round picks. You can get a bunch for this. You avoid drafting the quarterback and making that decision. You avoid being wrong with your first pick. That would be a high pressure pick. You make what many would deem to be a very smart move, acquire a bunch of picks, and go about building this team through the draft, as you're probably going to have to say goodbye to a couple of these high-priced, guys you have on your team right now in Breece Hall, who there's already some thoughts that they're not thrilled with him. Obviously, Wilson and Sauce Gardner. Like, you can get a lot of picks for that seventh if Shedeur falls. And I wonder if the New York Giants would be interested in moving up, because then you're talking about, listen, think if we come away with that draft from a New York perspective. Think if the draft is the New York Giants take one of the two best players in the draft, and then the New York Giants move up to 7 and give up a bunch of, like, probably, I mean, you're talking about having to give up to move from where they are in the second round. You have to swap picks with them. You probably have to give them, you know, at least a 1 and a 2 next year, and then possibly a 2 and a 3 the year after that. You're going to acquire a bunch of prime picks for the New York Jets, and the New York Giants come away with their future quarterback and possibly the best player in the entire draft. And the Jets and this young GM avoid making a critical mistake. They'll get a huge package for a quarterback. They'll have more picks this year and next year, and they'll ease into this building process. Because I like Tyler Warren. I have no idea what he's going to be. I don't think he's as big a tight end prospect as Bowers was last year. I don't think there's anyone at 7 that you cannot pass up on. To me, there's 2 players in this draft that you can't pass up on, and they're not going to be there at 7. And if Shedeur falls, I think if Shedeur Sanders makes it past the New York Giants, if I'm the Jets, I'm on the phone. I'm either seriously consider taking him, or I'm on the phone and seeing what anybody will give me to move up and get their quarterback. I like that better than taking the tight end. I do. The Giants, I'm not interested in trading back. I want the quarterback, even if they don't like Sanders. You're talking about top of the talent pool. You're talking about guys you're expecting to be Pro Bowlers and all pro. I don't know if that's there at 7. There are obviously talented guys, don't get me wrong. There is going to be a Pro Bowl level player there. It's the matter of guessing the right one. There's no doubt there's going to be an all-pro Pro Bowl caliber player available to them at seven. It's the matter of getting it right. I don't think it's a slam dunk. It's not available to us right now. We don't know how it's going to play out. I think those two players are perceived locks for that type of talent. At seven, you got to guess the right one. And instead of making that guess and being wrong with your first pick as the Jet GM, you punt that decision and get a bunch of picks moving forward with this team in this building process. Because let's be honest, when you sign, I don't care what anybody says. I know it's football decisions. And they want to win now and everything like that. They chose not to bring back the Hall of Fame quarterback. They went with Justin Fields, who was benched for Russell Wilson. Like, the idea that it's about winning now with the Jets, I don't know if it is. I wish it would be. And I do think they have the talent enough to be a capable team and better than they were last year. But if this coach is a culture builder, and they don't need that top pick to turn around their fortunes. They have the roster right now to be a far better team. And they're not going to be able to pay all these guys. They've already lost Reed. You're going to lose some of these guys. You're obviously, the draft process is going to be very important for them. You're going to want to build through the draft. The ability of them to get multiple picks over the next couple of years, if Shedeur Sanders falls, really makes a lot of sense to me. I was thinking about it today. Yesterday I was on, if Shedeur Sanders falls, you have to take him. Today it's either that, or depending on how many people would be willing to move up to seven to take him, you might want to establish the future of this franchise over the next couple of years. Because maybe no one's jumping out to draft him third. Maybe nobody's looking at him at the top of the draft, but if you can get him for seven, maybe someone will be willing to give you something. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls. Jason in Somerset. What's up, Jason?
Hey, Chris.
What's up?
Hey, listen, you got some good points and you got some semi-bad points.
Okay.
Justin Fields, what did he go? What, 5-1?
He went 4-2 with the Pittsburgh Steelers through six games last year.
4-2.
Mm-hmm.
4-2. It was better than what Russell Wilson was doing.
Was it?
Guys in Pittsburgh, I think so.
Was it?
I think.
Well, let me ask you a question. Well, let me ask you a question then, Jason. In my bad takes, let me ask you about your take right there. Why did Mike Tomlin and the Pittsburgh Steelers not agree with you?
Well, that's. You have a point.
I'm just saying, if he did lead them to the playoffs, 4-2 doesn't get you to the playoffs. Russell Wilson did win a lot of football games there. The last four games of the regular season into the playoffs, he faded. And while the team was fading, why didn't they go back to the quarterback that was 4-2 at the start of the year? Why did they not make that decision?
I can't tell you why.
I can't tell you why either, Jason. It makes me think that Justin Fields isn't that good.
I would have gone back with him, and I bet you they would have been a little better off.
I think Mike Tomlin's a pretty good head coach who's got his finger on the pulse of his team better than almost any coach in the league. He's been a proven winner, and he's been one of the great coaches in the NFL, and he didn't make that decision. So I respect your opinion by all means, and I'm not saying I'm an expert. I'm saying Mike Tomlin is. And I saw what Mike Tomlin chose to do, and he didn't do that.
I still think the Jets will be in a good position. I agree with your takes on possibly taking Sanders for or trading and getting a lot of picks for next year.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that offensive lineman, that tackle, the right tackle that's there, that should be there at seven.
Yeah.
Abdul, I think his name is.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
I forget his name. Abdul. I think he would be great to finish building around whoever our future will be. If next year there should be a good quarterback, maybe Arch Manning. I don't know. Who knows?
I mean, again, you're hoping to win. I don't know if I'm going to be in a position. The tackle out of Missouri, Armand Membo. I don't know. Listen, I think they kind of got. You know, Fashanu really played well last year. I think they were better with the offensive tackle. You can't go wrong. I mean, if he's a great tackle, then, you know, you're going to feel very good about that pick. But, I mean, I don't think they need to do it. I mean, obviously, you know, you can go Walker, linebacker out of Georgia. Obviously, Tyler Warren, tight end. There's a lot of places you can go. You lost Reed. Will Johnson, the cornerback out of Michigan, is a high prospect. Like, there's different things the Jets could do. Absolutely. And those are all good players. I'm not suggesting that there's not going to be a good player for them at seven. There's going to be a good player for them at seven. They are going to have an option to draft a player who's a Pro Bowler and a All-Pro type player. One of those guys that we just mentioned is going to be that for them. If they draft, but you got to draft the right guy. I don't think they're slam dunks. I don't think we know for certain which one of those guys it is. I think there is a mistake there too at seven. There's going to be the wrong guy to draft. There's going to be the right guy to draft. And we got to trust Muji to make it where I think the Giants, I don't want to trade back even if they don't want the quarterback. Like, I want the quarterback in Shedeur Sanders. That's what I would do. But even if they don't want to do that, if I had a conversation with Brian Daboll right now, he'd be like, Chris, shut your fat mouth. We're not drafting a quarterback. Enough of this. I'd be like, okay, well, which one of the two are you taking? Because I don't want to trade back. I still believe in taking great talent, and I believe those two are that, right? And I think most everybody believes that. But at seven, there's room to have the discussion about trading back. And if Shedeur Sanders is there, now, again, maybe I'm misguided on the value of Shedeur Sanders. And maybe the rest of the league feels the way the Giants and Browns would have to feel if this scenario plays out. And maybe nobody's like, hey, whatever, I'm not that interested in moving up to get Sanders. It's whatever. If he falls to me, I'll consider it. And certainly the Saints at nine, I would think, would be the team to do it. Because if he gets past the Browns and the Giants, if he gets past the Giants, New England's not going to draft him. I doubt very much the Jaguars are going to draft him. The Raiders are interesting at six, but they did sign Geno Smith. I wouldn't put it past them. It's not something you can't do with bringing Geno Smith to the team, but they've got an older coach now. They've got the quarterback they just traded for and paid. I would think they would try and impact this team as much as they can with that sixth pick. So, I mean, I think it's a clear shot to seven. And I'm trying to have some fun and make a giant jet trade. That takes a lot for the Giants to move up all the way to seven. I understand that would take, you know, moving next year's draft. Like, it would take a lot. But if the Giants are willing to do it, I think the Jets should listen. Or the Saints are willing to move up from nine to seven, I think that's what they should do. I think Shedeur Sanders is the key to this draft. And if he falls back to the Jets, I either take him or I seriously consider fielding phone calls on who wants to come up and take their franchise quarterback, because we see how valuable the quarterback is, obviously, and how teams value the quarterback position. And I don't think there's another player in the draft that anyone would trade up to more than for the quarterback at Shedeur Sanders. So I think the Giants not picking him has a big impact on the Jets. And I'm just saying, I like the idea of the rookie GM being able to take a breather. Like, he gets to be the good guy, because I think most people will sell, oh my, look at all the picks he got. Like, and then you're not locked into my first decision was a failure. And I'm not saying you should act afraid or be afraid to make that pick. I'm just saying a rookie GM with the New York Jets, a team that, in my mind, I don't care what they say publicly, when you pass on keeping Aaron Rodgers and you sign Justin Fields to be your quarterback, that is not a football win now decision. I'm sorry. I disagree. I can't imagine, like, it's a culture thing, a shot in the dark on a 26-year-old kid with athleticism who you feel you could turn into something, fine. But, like, it's still now a building process. Right? What was the reaction from all the players? Oh, I guess we're in rebuild mode again. Like, that, and he had to talk to them about it. Like, that's the feel. So for me, if you're there at seven, and you're a new GM who's in the process of building something here, you feel like the roster right now is pretty good. You're concerned about re-signing your great players, but your great players are going to be there this year. And if you get anything out of Justin Fields, this roster, this defense should be far better with, you know, a legitimate head coach and a defensive-minded one at that, as opposed to what we saw once they fired Robert Saleh last year. Like, you're going to be better defensively. You do have some weapons offensively. You've brought in a new quarterback, and I don't know if this pick right here in a division that has the Buffalo Bills in it and a resurgent New England Patriots team in it and a Miami team that you know can be talented if the quarterback can stay healthy. Like, I don't know the impact this player has in year one. I don't know how great the player you're going to get at number seven is. And the idea of being able to, like, take a breath, not be locked into your first pick and be judged by it year one. Get your footing, have your first NFL draft, acquire a ton of picks for your second one when you feel a little bit more comfortable with the process. Next year's draft is quarterback heavy. You'll have more picks to maybe go up and get your quarterback too. That's the other part of this. Next year's a big time quarterback draft year. And if you find out that Justin Fields isn't the guy, you might be able to acquire enough picks with that seventh pick if Shedeur Sanders falls, where now next year, depending wherever you are, you might have the assets to move up and get your quarterback next year. Like, it sets you up for a lot if you're willing to make that move. And I'm just trying to have fun with the angle of the New York Giants making that pick, because to me, I want to be bold and I don't care what they give up. If you told me they got Carter and Sanders, I'm through the roof, and we'll see how it goes. Even if it costs me next year's first round pick, I'll live with it. And it's going to cost more than that. But even if it's the Saints, even if it's whoever, if you can acquire picks and set yourself up with a good young roster this year that you're concerned about paying moving forward, you acquire a bunch of draft picks, a young GM doesn't get forced to make a seventh overall pick that's going to be with him forever, as we've seen what the second overall pick did with Joe Douglas. Like, it won't be a quarterback, it won't be that high of a value, it won't be that high much, you know, that high of a Q rating pick, it won't be that big a deal, but it'll still be your first pick. If it's a bomb, like Evan Neal was for Joe Shane, obviously that lingers. You get to go through the draft process, your first one, without having to be locked into your first pick and judged by it. You acquire a ton of picks to let someone move up and take the quarterback. You still have a pretty good roster this year. The idea that you're going to get a pass or some sort of, you know, first year honeymoon with a new head coach, as long as he turns the defense into better and turns the defense better and has some accountability, and you feel like you're a well-run, buttoned-up program and win enough games, everyone's going to be fairly happy. You've got a bunch of picks next year with a big-time quarterback prospect draft where you'll be in position to move up even if you win games. I think it just makes sense. I think Shedeur Sanders and the Giants' decision impacts the Jets immensely.
In 2009, 3 days before Halloween, a grisly crime stunned the seaport town of Anacortes, Washington.
I can only describe it as evil.
From 48 Hours, this is Train to Kill, the dog trainer, the heiress, and the bodyguard.
He couldn't control his obsession.
Who was the hunter and who was the hunted? Follow and listen to Train to Kill on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.